Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gowan, and you are here for Love Letters Live. This is our weekly radio show on just that, love letters, and the seemingly endless forms they can take. Every love letter is different. They are not all romantic, and if you'd like to check our website, you can see the unusual, charming variety of non-romantic love letters. We'll talk about that later. But right now, I want to go to our guest, Gunda Trepp. And Gunda has some really interesting things to share with us, but tell us first what it is you do professionally.
I'm a writer, I'm a journalist, and I also worked as a lawyer when I was still in Germany.
Oh.
So I have that background. But now, since I quit my job in Germany and am living here in San Francisco, I'm just writing essays for my old newspaper.
How nice. So that's interesting. I didn't realize that you were a lawyer. So you're practiced in a variety of ways of speaking your mind and stating your case. And that is really largely what love letters are about. Love letters are speaking your mind, stating your case in the dearest and clearest way possible. So this is going to be good for you. So tell us about your life somewhat up to here. I know that you have a wonderful, I don't know how new, a marriage, and I'd love to hear about that and share that with our listeners. And how did you come here, and how did it come that you met this man, and what was your courtship?
Well, I met this man, mm-hmm. my now husband. I think I met him maybe 10 years ago in Germany, but actually I met his wife.
Oh, well, okay, so, talk about that, because you were widowed, right?
I was widowed. It wasn't that long ago that I was widowed. So, and we had that official lunch, and I was sitting next to her, and I was still really in mourning, and she said she was so my kind of person.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm just a little missed a beat. You met his then wife.
Mm-hmm.
In Germany. How did you come to meet her? I mean, why were they there?
Yeah, that's a good question. My now husband is a rabbi,
mm-hmm.
and he was the last rabbi before the Nazis came in Oldenburg, which is which is the city where I was born. So, and I was active. I was on the board of a society for Christian-Jewish relationships. So, and this board had the meeting and the lunch with the former rabbi, and Leo Trepp and his wife Miriam. And Miriam and I totally fell in love.
Uh-huh. So you fell in love with her first.
That's right. So she was sitting next to me and was asking so directly. She said, "I think you're really beautiful, but you look so sad. What's going on with you?" And I thought, wow, that's not American. So I was totally impressed with her. And we just didn't separate the whole day. We spent the whole day together, and that is how it started.
So he was, you say your now husband was the last rabbi.
Right.
Before the Nazis came. So he obviously was able to leave, and now he's coming back.
Right. He was able to leave Miriam, and he left Germany. He went to the concentration camp, and then with the help of the chief rabbi of England, he got out, and they had to leave Germany in the next 14 days, otherwise he wouldn't have been able to leave the concentration camp. So they went out, they went to England, helped the kinder transport in England, and then they went to America.
Just to say, the kinder transport in England was people spiriting Jewish children out of...
Right, people, uh-huh. when the children who were arriving from Germany, they took care of them there and saw that they got to their families. And
so it was a life-saving
right,
program.
Right, right.
Okay, go ahead. So, meanwhile, you're in love with his wife.
Right, and that went on until she died in 1999, in December 1999. And... then I just had this very strong relationship with Leo. I mean,
already
I came,
built.
I already built, because I visited her before she died, when she was very sick already. And he, of course, was always there. I stayed with him in his home, and then I came to her funeral again, and it just developed. So, and then we started to exchange letters. And
he was back in the United States, and he was still in Germany.
Yeah, he was back, and of course he was here, and I was in Germany. I was still working, and I was still with my newspaper. And so it just went back and forth, and he asked me he asked me questions, practical questions, and so and then when he came back to Germany, he always goes to Germany, which I think is amazing. I don't know if I would be able to do that, but he does, because he thinks he has to tell something to the German people, especially to young people.
So when he goes, does he go there to speak?
He goes there to speak, and especially he goes there for over 20 years now to Mainz, to his university in the city where he was born, and teaches Jewish studies. And of course, most of his listeners are non-Jewish, and
young.
I think he does an amazing work. So he really opens the...
How do they relate to him?
Oh, wonderfully. I mean, they just love him.
I mean, do they ask questions? They get involved in his journey?
They ask questions. They, I mean, when I come and pick him up after his lessons, he is always surrounded by young people, and they just ask everything of questions. I mean, he has a lot of Muslims, too. Not a lot, but he has a few Muslims. Mm-hmm. Among his students.
Who are interested in this particular part of Jewish history?
Right. The Nazi, no, he doesn't talk about the Nazis so much. What he wants to show, especially the young German students, is that Judaism is not about being a victim, but how wonderful the religion Judaism is, mm-hmm. and how wonderful the Jewish religion is. And that is what he does in Germany. And he gives a lot of lectures about it over the whole country, and then so we always go in April and come back for the high holidays in September, so we stay there over the summer.
Just to catch me up, so you're still living in Germany?
No, I'm when we came closer, and
that's the piece I want. So how did you? you're missing a big romantic leap here. Gwendolyn.
Well, I thought we wouldn't talk about that, but
if you don't want to,
to make a long story short,
want the falling in love part.
Imi is so much older than I am.
How old is he now?
He is 95 now. Mm-hmm. I'm 50, so mm-hmm. you can see that's really unusual. And by then he was 88, which is already very old. And I was...
Well, it's not as old as it used to be, though.
Well, and he is so young. I mean, mm-hmm. he is the youngest soul I've probably ever met. He is so interested in everything. He is so inspiring.
What was the proposal?
My proposal, proposal?
Yes. How did you make the decision from going to Germany to coming here to live with him or marry him?
I just realized at one point that I had fallen in love with this guy, and I was totally mad with myself, but I couldn't help it. Yeah. So, and he obviously was too.
He was in love with me.
I think, well, this guy is so ridiculous. Why is he sending this letters to me? I don't even know what he's talking about. Well, then I knew after a while. So
he expressed his love first?
Yeah, not directly. I mean, that's not his generation. But he told me things. I thought, I don't understand what that is about. Well, and then finally my girlfriend said, are you totally stupid? This guy is in love with you.
Oh, how nice that you had that girlfriend.
I know. So, and then finally we were together, which happened in 2000. And since then in the first years we still separated because I still had my job. But then I just quit my job because I thought... I probably can get a job again, but mm-hmm. I'll never get this chance again to live with the man I really love.
Yes, and see, Teresa, this is why we need television, because mm-hmm. I wish people could see just the stars in your eyes when you're talking about him. It's wonderful.
Well, he is a wonderful man.
Yeah. So what are his qualities? I mean, what makes him the youngest soul?
His qualities for me, well, I think he's highly intelligent, which I really need. And he is sophisticated, he is interesting, He loves opera, which I do.
Oh, I was going to ask what kinds of things you do together.
He loves classical music, which I do. He is, of course, interested in Judaism, which I am. Mm-hmm. So he is everything I could ask for. And the age part, well, I just, you can have it all. And I got so much, so I don't ask for more.
Oh, that's just, I barely know what to even ask next. That's mm-hmm. so complete. What does he look like?
He has brown eyes. Mm-hmm. He looks very charming.
Handsome man?
As he is. Mm-hmm. He is very charming. Mm-hmm. He is a womanizer, which sometimes in the first time made me really mad. But he is. And he
well,
is.
But he's loyal to you.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's not exactly a womanizer. He knows how to flirt and appreciate.
That's right.
Is that what you mean? That's a good thing.
Yeah, I would agree, yeah.
Because okay. if he can't tell where other beauty lies, how would he know that you have
it? I think you're right. That's a good point. I think you're right. So he has that, and he has white hair, mm-hmm. and he is so lively. I mean, when he talks with his hands, he talks with his whole mind. I mean, you can just see what's in his mind, how educated he is. Mm-hmm. How I always think this is the old Jewry in Germany,
mm-hmm.
and I'm so
sophisticated. You mean
sophisticated
and
still uh-huh. so, I mean, religious but still so liberal and so open and
worldly.
So I just sometimes I feel so honored that he chose me
oh.
and that I'm able to live with him. Because
can you imagine how he feels?
Well,
that you chose
him. I can concur with all of this because a few weeks ago I had the pleasure of having lunch with Leo and Gunda, uh-huh. and I was seated next to him, and I could have listened to him all afternoon. He is all the things that you say.
Thank you. Thank
how
you.
How nice. Maybe we could have him come here and do a letter. Let's talk to him about that. But meanwhile, this is yours.
So just to remind our listeners, this is Love Letters Live. We're here every week at this time. And we also invite you to visit our website, www.lovelettersquad.com, where we have past programs and more information about our mission, which is, as Janet and I say, to make the world a better place one letter
yes,
at a time.
Yes, we're changing the world for the better one letter at a time. And we hope to have your help, all of you. And let's spell that because it's a new website for us. Love Letter Squad. You want to just spell it out?
L-E-T-T-E-R-S...
L-O-V-E.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, let's do the whole thing.
L-O-V-E-L-E-T-T-E-R-S-Q-U-A-D.com.
Perfect. Okay, because we're going to be doing much more on it for you all. Okay. So the next question always at this point is, who gets the love letter today? And I see that you have got something just beautifully written already. Would
yeah.
you just read it? Tell us who it is meant for and why you've
uh-huh.
chosen this person,
uh-huh.
and then read it.
Yeah, when I talked to Teresa at this lunch, and she asked me if I could imagine to do this, I thought about to whom I would really like to write a love letter. And the only person who came to my mind is my late husband, because... Well, I can talk to my now husband, I can talk to my siblings, whom I love, and to my family and to my friends, but to Falk I can't talk anymore, and I just thought it might be...
You want to.
I want to, yeah. and I want to let him know that I'm still so grateful for what he gave me and okay. what I probably didn't appreciate so much when... He was still alive.
How perfect to say that out loud. So this is one of the, I think, many, many beautiful reasons for a love letter to someone who's gone. And you want to say things that you didn't think of saying or that you just didn't realize. I mean, fair is fair. Sometimes we don't sense things till later. Things, appreciations click in later when we look at the bigger world.
Right, because sometimes you're just too... I mean, I was very young when we married. I was 24, and sometimes you're too young, and I was too busy with my career.
Exactly.
And I just had all these things in my mind.
You're
and
busy with your career.
He was just there. I mean,
and going
to
the market and emptying the garbage. I mean, life has a lot of
Right.
Small and big details.
Right,
it,
and it was so natural that he was there, and
yes.
I just took it for granted, and now I know that in my new marriage now I know I will never take it for granted, because it's not that I deserve that and that it comes just. You need to be grateful.
If we're lucky, we stay aware of the gratitude and we don't take for granted. Mm-hmm. So could I just ask you to read that?
I have a question. Did he die unexpectedly?
Yeah, he was 57 when he died, and he had a brain tumor. Mm-hmm.
So there was no warning?
There was no. I mean, when we went to the doctors, when he went to the hospital first, they told us that with therapy he would have a year, and without probably half a year. And he said, I just wanted to go home. Mm-hmm. I want to go home, and I want to be with my wife and with my family. And that is what we did.
So
we
didn't have any treatment at all?
He had one operation. They took the huge tumor out, but it, of course, came back.
Mm-hmm.
And then he didn't want to have a second and third and whatever operation. And I totally agreed with it, because it was terminal anyway. We knew that. So
he didn't want to prolong the death.
No, he always wanted quality of life. And at that point, I really couldn't agree more.
Yes.
That would be the right thing to do.
So read us this.
So shall I just
read
it now?
Just read it.
I hope I can do it without
we have Kleenex if
being emotional.
Here. If you're teary, we are ready for you.
Okay. Volker. So his name was Volker. Volker, I haven't talked to you for a long time. For so long that now it seems even strange to me, a little weird. And still, the last days, I've been thinking of you so often that my desire to talk to you again overcomes all the other feelings. There was a time when talking to you was the only thing which kept me alive. That was 13 years ago, in the days and months after you had died, when all I could do was to drive to your grave, put my hand where I thought your hands, these beautiful, slim, once piano-playing hands, would rest. I would take them in my hands in my mind and would tell you all the things I had been doing that day. But mostly I would tell you how much I loved you, how much I missed you, and I would ask you to please, please come back to me, only for one day, for one moment, for one touch. But you, of course, didn't. It took me 4 years to accept that you never would. These years changed me in a way I would have never thought of. Not even in the times when I was a student and change was an ever-demanding force for life. But the years after you had gone, after you had been gone, were different. I suffered as I had never suffered before, and the change was existential. It was life-saving. And it was only then, in these years, when I could fully understand what you had tried to teach me about life and all the years of our marriage. So in a way, you were closer to me in these years than ever before. This all came to my mind in the last days when I thought about that you will be gone for 13 years now, and how different my life is today, how happy I am today, and how appreciative of life. And I thought about how much of this I owe to you. I know that you would love a lot of things I'm doing today, because today I'm trying to live a life you have given me the example for. In the almost 13 years we were together, you showed me what it means to have a meaningful and caring life. And although I didn't pay much attention in our marriage because it seemed so natural, it finally helped me when everything was turned around. When you were gone and I felt the need to radically change everything, I knew in which direction I had to go. You always set examples without talking about it. In our first months we were still separated. I studied in Berlin and you were working 400 miles away in a small town near Hamburg in western Germany. One night I called you because I was so depressed. You listened for a while, then you said, I'll be with you in a few hours. And you were. You drove all the night, comforted me, bought red roses the next day, and then you had to go back. Whenever I would come home late in the night for the weekend, there would be red roses and a note waiting for me downstairs. When we were married for 5 years, my mother died. Not only were you with me in the most loving way when I took care of her in her last months, but you comforted her. You talked with her about death and regrets and meaning and afterlife. You sat there holding her hand. You prayed with her, and when she died, we were both with her. After her death, I went back to work, and you didn't hesitate 1 second when my young brother asked if he could live with us. You took him under your wings. Together with him, you looked for a school, and very soon you became a second father to him. How often did I get up in the midst of the night and would hear voices in the kitchen, and you would sit around the big kitchen table with my brother alone or with him and his friends and would discuss all questions 16-year-old have. You would talk about politics and religion, about philosophers and their theories. Sometimes he told you things he wouldn't tell me. You gave him what you had, your unconditional love. And that is what you gave me, who was always dealing with her career, always busy, always working, not listening to you, who would say, darling, there are other things in life. You would ask me to go to Rome with you, to Israel, to Budapest, but I was sorry, I couldn't take off, too busy, you understand, go and enjoy. And you did. And you never mentioned if you were hurt when you had to go by yourself again. You never asked me to be like you. You always loved me for what I was. Only years later I knew what it had really meant to you when I had finished my studies and had gotten the scholarship for an additional journalistic education. You must have been devastated because I wouldn't come home and be living with you except for the weekends for another 18 months. But instead of talking me out of it, you said, that's a fantastic chance. Take it. I'll be all right. How much love you gave to others, I could only imagine when people at your funeral told me that they wouldn't have survived certain tragic situations in their lives the way they did without your support. Letters told me about you and your warmth, your charm, and your giving and loving character. One friend wrote, even I saw him only rarely. I'm walking through the house with the feeling of a huge, huge loss. And another friend said, he was a human being with a beautiful mind. You were beautiful in every way, and I don't know why I had the privilege of being your wife. How can I ever thank you for our life and for your gift of unconditional love, which I always took for granted? Only when you were already sick, I asked you for forgiveness for my failures, and you just said, if I had wanted to, I would have said something, but it was okay. And it is. Don't think about it anymore. I love you above anything. Thank you for being with me now. With these words, you gave me the ability to live after you had died, because only by knowing that you had forgiven me, I finally, even it took years, could forgive myself, because I still then felt your unconditional love. And I felt something else. I felt that without the painful process of your sickness and death, I wouldn't have changed at all. And sometimes I'm shocked by this knowledge. Why is it that we have to experience by ourselves what others try to teach us without success? I still don't have an answer, but I know that my appreciation of everything today is owed to the fact that your death showed me in the most shocking way the meaning of being too late in life. Today I know that I better fill any single day with love and meaning and caring for other people, because otherwise it might be just wasted. I know that it will never be a source of regret not to have written a certain article or a certain book on time, but that it always could be an eternal source of regret having turned down the plea of my partner, a sibling, or a friend to be there for him or her. Now, not tomorrow or next week, but now. Because after you were gone, I knew that there might be no such thing as tomorrow or next week. We all know that in a way. We sometimes hear about it in sermons on holidays or from people who recall life-threatening events they experienced and from people who lost a person who was close to them. But most of this talk for us is theoretical, not connected to our lives. Most of us are too driven to even dare thinking about matters like these. That was I before you died, anxious to please others, trying to be good as well in law as in journalism, engaging myself in countless organizations which all seemed to be so important, never listening to you who would try to get me focused on more important things, because you knew. You had lost two children in your first marriage. You knew about being too late. You knew about the importance of family, friendship, and how wholly unimportant it was what other people thought about you when you knew you were doing the right things. I will never forget one event. Your secretary called at 9:30 in the morning and you were still in the shower. I was mad with you, asking, "What am I supposed to tell her?" And you said, "Tell her I'm taking a shower." And I said, "That late?" And you answered, "I've been sitting and working at my desk until 3 o'clock in the morning." I said, "But she doesn't know that." And you answered, "But I know." When I think about it today, I still feel ashamed how little I understood you, how little I honored your uprightness and decency. But I just couldn't. I didn't know what I know today. So the only thing I can tell you now is, today I understand. I know. And I love you for everything you brought to my life, even I was only able to take it late. I want you to know that I'm happy today, because by understanding you, I know what counts in life and what doesn't. And I want you to know that I'm happy with my new husband, because you enabled me to be a giving and caring woman. I want you to know that a part of my happiness is and will always be you. I love you. Thank you.
Oh, my. Thank you so much. That is one of the most beautifully written letters I've ever heard. One of the most. And we don't have any more time to talk about it more. I wish we did, but I think it says just everything. Thank you. You're just a beautiful writer and thinker and woman who feels things so clearly.
Thank you.
And I know that letter will be such an example, and I just want to say at this point, if you people out there listening ever think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, you can see once more that writing a love letter is a special occasion.
A special occasion for yourself.
Exactly, and for anyone you care to share it with. But thank you, Gunda, so much
for
sharing.
Well, my question is, to whom will she send it?
Yeah, I didn't know if we had time for
that.
We
have time for that.
Okay, so a love letter is a beautiful thing on its own, but it's not really a letter until it's mailed.
Mm-hmm.
So I can think of people. Have you thought of who to mail this to?
I already emailed it to two girlfriends whom I asked to read it yesterday evening and to say and to tell me if my English is good enough.
Yes, it's just as perfect as could be. This is just such a work of art. But my question is, you know, this is so beautiful. I'm thinking, shouldn't it go to relatives of his? What about his brother and his stepsons? And you can say, I wrote this to folk, but I want you to have it, so you'll know more about him and how much I loved him.
And it's
too long to do in handwriting, and we say love letters should be in handwriting, but that's 4 pages.
Or to your brother, who knew him so well.
Anyone. Mm-hmm. You can send it to 6 people. It doesn't matter. It should be out there. But since it's a big order to copy every one of those by hand, at least a big signature in your handwriting and the date.
Mm.
Because handwriting is your thumbprint, and it is a joy to see. Will you do that?
I think I'm going to send a letter to his sons.
Good.
My stepsons. And
but in an envelope with your signature.
Should I?
Yes. Email is wonderful, but to get it in an envelope, an email won't have your signature. An email, look at me, won't have this, something you've actually touched. This way, what's felt the touch of your hand.
okay,
in love for folk will be what they open and they touch.
Okay, so I think I will do that. Thank you so much. We really are out of time now, Janet. Just time to remind our listeners that this is Love Letters Live, and this is the Love Letters Squad. We hope you'll join us every week at this time for more wonderful letters and guests that we have. So till next time, goodbye.
From Janet and Teresa, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.